Namaste. Greeting, friends. Welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, especially newcomers. We always good to see that these ideas are attracting people who want to consider these ideas, which are the unity of all, not only of all the races, the brothers and sisters, but of all nature. And the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, which is that wisdom which is eternal, and it is your birthright. These are ancient teachings, not that old makes them necessarily good, but they have been test checked and verified by countless generations of sages and adepts, not trusting one another's judgment, but coming together and practicing these principles of love, of hope, of peace, of brotherhood, and realizing that that is the only way. So we do not engage in differences, individual differences of opinion. We do not get involved with the weighty partisan issues of the day, but we do talk about tried and true eternal verities. We believe that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. Therefore, we have no constitution, no bylaws, no officers. We are not an organization. We are an association of students. You wonder how it works. It works beautifully. It really does. So we have no distinctions here, and we welcome all of those that are in accord with the declared purposes and are willing to fit themselves through study and otherwise to adapt the principles in their lives and carry them forth into the world, the one world. Now, in order to do this, and today's the summer study on the monad is very interesting because that is really the basis of unity. So it all comes down to this spiritual vivifying principle, which of course we will discuss in the class today. In the summer, we have two classes a week. We have this morning, where the doors open at 10:30, and from 11 to 12, we have a presentation of the part, and then we have a discussion. During the summer, on this summer, and almost every summer, we study on Wednesday nights the Bhagavad Gita. The rendering is by William Q. Judge, and it is the song of Krishna, the synthesis of Indian philosophy. And that is done from 7:45 until 9 p.m. on Wednesdays during the summer. Now the doors on Wednesday open at 5:30 p.m. and you can avail yourself of the library, which is you can do independent study there. There is a librarian available for any assistance that you may require or direction, but it's a self-directed study. We have comparative religious studies and philosophy and sciences and whatnot. And the library closes at 7:30. The book table is open, is it 6 or 6:30? We're not even sure. 6:30, from 6:30 until slightly before the meeting, where a selection of straight-line theosophical writings are available. Now, there are many writers of theosophical tracts, and the United Lodge of Theosophists, we pretty much stay to the basic original teachings. Anything else you want to do is fine. We have no opinion on that, but here we sell the original teachings from of the founders. So, upcoming events. Well, in the winter time, we do comparative religious studies on the third Friday of the night of third Friday of the month, which is an interesting study. We're always looking for donations of time, money, and service. Now, we do not solicit directly, but if you want to make a goodwill donation, you may make that at the book table, or there's a little box on the shelf on your way out. Looks like a little poor box in a way, but it's strictly a goodwill. There's no obligation imposed or implied. We merely state that it is there, that it is available for you if you see fit. Now, before we begin, we think we're done with the announcements. They're not as lengthy in the summertime. Does everyone have today's the broadsheet for today? Okay, very good. We're continuing in the mystery of individuality, and the title is I Amness Immortal? And we will have a volunteer summarize the part, and then afterwards we will have question, answers, and comments.
So the second half of this article that we're studying tonight is pretty short, actually, but there is so much information loaded in it. It's a very interesting study because we're looking at, is the I Amness the mortal? It starts out by stating that the self-conscious spiritual being did not really appear until 18 million years ago. But the intellectual evolution also did not start to progress until that same time. Before then, there was no differentiation of the individual egos. Now, all the egos are of the same essence, right at the point when this differentiation begins. But the feeling of how he puts it here, egoity? Is that
it? That's close enough.
Yeah. Meaning that the ego is being sensed. But even then, it was not established, as we are informed, that the individuals, manasaputras, are the direct radiations of the divine ideation, which mainly means that we are basically all of that same divine essence. Now, what's interesting is that the number of incarnations determines the perception. In other words, the differentiation, how far that ego has differentiated and what kind of perceptions it has. So the more incarnations, the more involved are the perceptions, and more differentiation. So we can see now how everyone is different. But in that essence, in that spiritual essence, we are still all the same. And that sense of individuality is only noted on the plane of mind, because it is said that if mind was not involved, differentiation of Atma or Buddhi would not be possible, because that is the spiritual being that joins us all together. And the quote down here is, Buddhi in man is the vehicle of Atman, which vehicle is of the essence of the highest plane of Akasha, and therefore does not differentiate. So when we're looking at that true spiritual essence of our being, that does not differentiate. It does, nothing differentiates until it comes into matter and manas is involved at the time, manas or mind. So it is when the spiritual part of us drops into matter and manas is involved, that's when we get that sense of I. And we always use as an example here is that if somebody has amnesia, they always have that sense of I. They can still say, I can't remember, or I was there or I wasn't there. So we always will have that sense of I. And the one of the reasons that it is only when that spiritual part of us manifests in matter is because of the contrast. Because when it's just Atman Buddhi, there is no contrast. It's just all spiritual. But when matter is involved and manas is involved, then there is that contrast that we can look at as being good and bad, night and day, that sort of thing. The purely spiritual man is not intellectual. The interesting thing here is manas is absorbed into Buddhi at the close of each life. And then Buddhi manas is absorbed into Atman at the close of the great period of evolution. So we know at that point that they do not cease to be. It's just that everything is brought back into that period of that giant period of rest. Nor is the individuality or the essence of the personality left behind. Everything is reabsorbed. Once reached, the same monad will reemerge therefrom as a still higher being on a far higher plane to recommence at its in its cycle of perfected activity. So we see that when everything is absorbed, when the next period of evolution occurs, we will be coming forth in a higher plane than what we are now.
Thank you. Well, we'll accept general questions or comments at this time. We would like to perhaps try something to give this a little more structure. You don't have to do this, but we were thinking about going paragraph by paragraph. It might be easier to follow because it is, in a sense, it's very basic but very abstruse and metaphysical at the same time. So perhaps we'll put out there that as it begins with the self-conscious being, it says the teaching seems to be that there was never any man on this planetary chain or this round or this globe until 18 million years ago. And just as a little bit of a background, perhaps, for those that are not familiar with the rounds and the races and the chains and the globes, which is going into in detail in the secret doctrine, And it is also, we study in the Ocean of Theosophy sometime around October, early November. And it often, it fascinates some and it terrifies others, where maybe it's a combination of both fascination and terror. But it's our background, it's our spiritual evolutionary background. And all of the Theosophy says that everything is seven. Seven is the key number. There's seven rounds, there's seven races, there's seven planetary, in the great period of evolution, which the monad is involved in always, from beginning to end, before man comes upon the scene. At the midpoint of evolution, which was 18 million years ago, man, meaning a thinking, self-reflective, sentient being, was endowed with the spark of mind. Before then, the forms were being readied, and there was perception, but not apperception, meaning self-reflective thought. So that is, without going into all the teaching, because it's really, in a sense, although the part begins with this, it's a whole separate study. We're certainly welcome to comment on it, but we're talking about spiritual evolution. Evolution being physical, intellectual, and spiritual. There being three streams. This man had his hand up first. Could you speak up a little bit?
The topic today being is I Amness Immortal. And for the last few Sundays, we have been concentrating on the idea of unity. Therefore, what makes us feel different from one another? Is that the reality?
Mm.
Because we seem to be given idea of oneness.
Okay, well, what makes us feel different? It's that there's a differentiation which takes place. It's like a light passing through a prism, and the seven colors are in the light, but it's blended, so we don't see it. The prism breaks it up into seven colors and its constituent parts, so then we see the differences. When we start incarnating and we become aware of the illusion of separateness. That might sound tortured, but it is an illusion, but we become aware of it because we're broken up into rays. The gentleman in the back had his hand up. Is it?
Yes. In the first paragraph, it says seven classes of monads. Now, we've studied, and it says that the races, the differentiation of races does not occur in the physical, it occurs in the spiritual. So I'm wondering, when they say seven classes, is that underpinning to the seven races that first started off?
Is that in the first? Is that written?
Paragraph, four lines down.
Four lines down, okay.
As far as the seven classes.
Okay, let me see here. Okay, very good. As far as the seven, okay, first of all, hundreds of millions of years have passed before man the thinker enters the scene. And then it says, as far as the seven classes of monads under the sway of karmic law are concerned, intellectual evolution did not begin until 18 million years ago. Then there was no differentiation. So, it talks about the question, could you repeat was the question or comment?
The question is this the underpinning to the seven races that first started this globe? You know, in the secret doctrine it says, this little first, the seven graces problem.
Right, right.
Is this the underpinning? Because we know it's, we know it supersedes physical. It goes back to spirit.
Right, it is physical. Well, it's something that's especially for newcomers to realize is that skin pigmentation is not race. Although it's that's how society differentiates race, but it's not. It doesn't have to do with skin pigmentation. Do you have a follow up or?
Well, yeah, we know it's beyond the physical, but
right.
This actually says pretty much that it's the spiritual. Is this the spiritual part that they're speaking of? The seven classes.
Right. It begins to differentiate 18 million years ago. Before that, there was no differentiation. In prior rounds, there was differentiation. It's kind of good. I think that the easiest way to understand this, perhaps, is to look at the water cycle, the hydrologic cycle, because we have precipitation, we have evaporation, and we have condensation. So in a sense that there's we were precipitated into individual hearts, egos, 18 million years ago. Before that, in a sense, we were condensed. We just put that out there as not as as a teaching, just something to consider. Perhaps it would, if we look at the water cycle, about there's three reservoirs. There's a reservoir below the ground, subterranean. There's a reservoir where the lakes and the streams, and there's a reservoir up above in the clouds. There's great amounts of water. And then under certain conditions, there's precipitation. And that's what, in a sense, the monad is always one, but, and it is not a physical thing at all, but it does differentiate. It does differentiate. So, yes.
Those seven classes of monads, I'm not sure whether I'm understanding it right, seem to be coexistent. That is, there are seven classes of monads. They are not sequential. But the races in the theosophical races in the evolutionary cycle, they are sequential. You have different races in different periods. So it looks like you can't equate these classes of monads with the seven races.
Okay. Yeah, we have
found that out as a
so we have classes of monads. We have the least progressed to the most progressed, and the less progressed. This is the interesting thing is that when they find like tribes living in harmony with nature, they don't have the heavy debt of karma that say we do. And they can actually, from what we read, they can bypass us in time, really, because if they stay true to their principles, they can progress. So we shouldn't look down upon any what we call less progressed peoples, because they're more innocent, they're more in tune with nature, they have a less of a karmic debt. In the back?
Well, prior to the period we're speaking of, before the thinker entered upon the scene, there was a development of form, and all the lower kingdoms were included in that, helping with that development of form. And then, as you there are the three. So when the forms were ready, the thinker entered into the forms, and there's where your duality, your contrast, your up, your down, your yes, your no, starts, because the thinker is now on the scene. But prior to that, the forms for them to continue development were being adjusted, were being added to.
Yes, there was a long period of planetary evolution. We believe it's 300 plus million years. Don't know what the exact figure was, but it was 300 and some million years where the forms were being ready, the planet was being readied for us. And that there's two groups. There's the solar and the lunar petries. We get our body from the lunar petries, and we get the mind from the solar petries. Yes.
And we have to remember that what these particles are about is that pre-evolutionary period before 18 million years, and that extends back billions of years. And we are told to consider the monad as a unit.
Right.
Rather than as classes, that's where our problem comes. We think in terms of separateness, but what we think the teacher is trying to get us to understand oneness, then proceeded downward into differentiation. And as far as 18 million years ago, that's when evolution, as far as we're concerned, what I think the people are trying to show is that prior to that, universal monad, oneness.
Thank you. So the spiritual monad is one, it is universal, it is boundless, but it gives off rays or reflections, because in order to know itself, it needs a vehicle. And that's a mystery there. So much of this is incomprehensible, really. We're reaching as far back as we can reach, and even then we're kind of on dangerous ground sometimes. Yes.
On the very first page, third paragraph, the feeling of egoity dates from this period. It would appear, but even then was not firmly established, for we are informed that individual manasakutras are the direct radiation of the divine ideation, individual in the sense of later differentiation. So, a sense of individuality doesn't commences on the plane of mind, on the plane of Atma or Buddha, such feeling means that.
Right, and we are more, We have involution and evolution. Involution is falling into matter or decreasing spirituality. Then we have the midpoint. Then we have the evolution, which is increasing spirituality and decreasing materiality. So we're, even though 18 million years sounds like a lot of time, and we've incarnated hundreds if not thousands of times in that period, it's still a fairly brief period in time when you look at the grand scheme of evolution, and just of this one great period of evolution, which goes to 16 figures. So it's absolutely mind-boggling. But so the second paragraph, it states that Then they become an active force and co-mingle with elementals, and so develop little by little the full type of humanity. That is to say, to develop in and endow man with his self-conscious mind or manus. So we need to co-mingle with the elementals, which are the blind forces of nature, is the easiest way to describe elementals. When ensouled with mind and intelligence, they act and can act very forcibly, but they themselves are conscious but not self-conscious. That is what separates us from the other kingdoms, is our full self-consciousness. We find maybe partial self-consciousness and amazing things in the animal kingdom, but the fully self-reflective self-consciousness is in the human kingdom. Yes?
Can we have a home or a house without a foundation?
Only if it's suspended from a tree, perhaps, and that would be swinging and pretty perilous, we think. So you need a good foundation. The point is well taken. We need a good foundation for humanity, for ourselves, and this is our spiritual heritage, and the development is a slow and gradual process. In the back.
But would it be true that it's not we who are commingling with the elementals? Rather, we think it's referring to the end of the paragraph before, those higher developed beings that another speaker said helped to create the form and guide the evolution along. Isn't that what we're talking about? Because at this point, man hasn't even been endowed. We're talking about the point where man becomes endowed with self-consciousness.
Okay, well, these are, at the end of the first paragraph, it states that reference is made to certain classes of Dhyan Chohans, which are archangels, really. They're the ones that are the builders. They're building, they design and build, in a sense, on the past patterns. They're working with what they've been given. They're working with the best tools that they have available. And that some of them are too far progressed and spiritualized. It says certain classes of them are too advanced and spiritualized to be thrown back forcibly from that high estate into the vortex of a new primordial evolution through lower kingdoms. But others, which are us, are thrown into it. So these, we are connected with them. We are connected with the Dhyan Chohans. We are really one in essence with them as well, although they have realized their potential. They have fully actualized their potential. They are in the stream, we are in the same stream of evolution as they are. There's no separation. But the most advanced ones, and we'll open this up for comment, what we think it says here is that they're too advanced to be thrown back, so they are, in a sense, architects and overseers and guiders, whereas we, the less advanced ones, we're here to do the work. And, yes.
But we're not even here yet at this point, you don't think.
Well, at the midpoint, we're endowed with mind. We're talking about 18 million years ago. We are lit up.
Right, but in that second paragraph, it says, to develop little by little the full type of humanity, that is to say, to develop in and endow man with his self-conscious mind. So at this point, as we imagine ourselves as self-conscious thinkers, and correct us if we're wrong, we think we're not on the scene yet.
Okay, so this is still prior to 18 million years ago, where we are being developed little by little into the full type of humanity. Well, we had to start from somewhere. We weren't, are we the full, let me, instead of answering the question, let me pose another question. Are we the full type of humanity now? Right here and today? Yes.
I think that goes back to the earlier question we're all trying to wrestle with about the seven classes of monads. If there is a differentiation there, it must be in development, or possibility of development, and we know when evolution is taking place here, those are coming over first who did as much work as possible to take it up again, and then we'll follow all of those in varying degree. Perhaps that is that seven places of monads, so that might also relate to the seven rounds and the seven grades.
Well, pretend we're in a school and we just have seven grades, okay? Then forget about the other nine or whatever
teachers
there are.
Come first.
Right. In a sense, the teachers do come first. They have to be there to open up the school. They have to be greeting the students as they come in. So they're from the prior rounds. And the school is always there. It always exists. And it's not just on this planetary chain. It's on, we think the analogy would carry throughout all the planetary chains. So the opportunity is there. If we study and get straight A's and really study hard and learn our lessons, then when we enter the second grade, we're fully prepared. If we're slackers, then we're in trouble, and we have to play catch up. And these seven classes, in a sense, some are more advanced and some are less advanced, like in any school. The school is always there. There are more advanced and less advanced. And the opportunity is there, though. We are endowed with this spark of mind. We're given the tools. It's up to us. That's why they say the gods were jealous. They're actually jealous because they follow all the rules because they know that's the way to do it. They've learned from experience. But in a sense, we can break the rules, we can be creative, we can do whatever we want, but we have to pay a price if we do that. Is there a follow-up?
There is. Then wouldn't the differentiation just be the end of paragraph 3, the range of perception and reflection increases, the realization of being becomes stronger. So isn't that what that development represents?
That's a good point. So,
which is that I amness.
The I amness. It becomes more and more apparent. It's the early races, it said that the gods were here incarnate and teaching directly, teaching the arts, the sciences, all the knowledge we need, in a sense giving us the tools. And we had great devotion to the teachers. But then the teachers left the scene because we need to learn for ourselves, and then we need to teach in kind the other less progressed egos. We need to pass it on. We need to pay it forward, in a sense. Yes, you had your hand up?
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to say was that we keep saying Diane Chilhans, right? Diane Chilhans, but aren't they often referred to as archangels? When that people,
yes, you can say archangels also.
Right. And they, even with their power, what they don't have that we do have is the power of choice.
Right.
That's what, in the Bible, when it says they speak of being jealous of man, it's because man has the power of choice and they don't.
Thank you. Yes.
It appears that as we are now, we have lost our sense of unity. How did that happen?
So how did we lose our sense of unity? Well, we like Narcissus staring at the reflection in the pond, we fell in love. We fell in love with or Pygmalion, who made the statue and fell in love with his own creation. We've become enamored with our powers and our bodies and our material possessions and what we're able to accomplish, and lost sight of the goal. Many have, not all. There's always those that are helping us. We have help. We always have help. We're never to be abandoned, no matter how bad things get or how bad we think they're going to get. But yes, it's true. We lost our way, but we needed to become involved. We needed to become involved in matter, to work with matter, but we got caught. We got clogged, in a sense. We got caught up in the matter and realizing that that's not the reality. So we have mistaken the reality for the illusion, and what is, and the spiritual, which is the true reality, is often lost sight of because of the senses and the sensations that we got caught up in our lower senses, and the higher senses that we have, like the buddhi manas, the spiritual reservoir of all teachings and knowledge. It's the higher intuition. That's what we're supposed to be developing now, not the kama manas, which is the lower desires. So we're using that power of mind. We're using it in the wrong direction. We need to make a U-turn, in a sense, and dwell on these ideas in order to have self-reflective thought and start reflecting on the higher, not the lower. Yes. Universal brotherhood is a fact in all nature, and that's not just for the human kingdom as well. There are seven kingdoms. So there are three classes of elementals, and then there are, you know, the mineral, the vegetable, the animal, and the human. And we are at the vanguard of this evolution. It's for us. This earth is for our evolution. It's been created for us. But we are connected to all, so we are to treat all well. We should treat everything well, or it'll backfire on us. It'll come to bite us in the corner. Yes, and so the feeling, the sense of identity, and the sense of individuality commences on the plane of mind, but there are two planes above it. And the monad, the Atma Buddhi, which is in everywhere and in everything, but is no thing, it informs, inspires, it's the substratum, but it's not a material thing. But so there are, in a sense, there are higher planes. So we look at them as the plane of Atma and Buddhi, which is the monad. And then when the monad differentiates, it becomes the ego, the not to be confused with ego, which is spelled the same way, but that's used in a different sense of personality. The ego is the real man. It's the eternal pilgrim. It's imperishable, but it's periodical. It's periodical. And now, as the real spiritual man is soul, the Atma is the all, it is incomprehensible. Buddhi is the first vehicle of Atma, which is our highest intuitions, the purest possible thought. And then we have the ego, which is man, which is Buddhi. Manas is the vehicle of Buddhi, and Manas being that spark. So it's, English is not a very good language for metaphysics. I mean, there are, but it's the language of, it's the most commonly spoken language on the planet now. So this is what we're working through. We're working through this vehicle. Yes.
We've heard in these rooms that adepts and masters have consciousness on each level. They're conscious on each level, during the sleep state, during all levels they have consciousness. But here, in paragraph 6, on the back it says, thus when we are in various sleep or after death states, we are not self-conscious. What is the consciousness that they exhibit?
Okay. Well, yes, there are consciousness on other planes. It's in the sleep state, like when we're waking up and we're coming back, then reality can, what we call reality, this earthly life, can kind of intrude on our dreams. And the dreams, there's a whole section on dreams and transactions of Blavatsky Lodge, which is very instructive. But we are one. We are on the highest spiritual planes in the deep sleep state, but that's beyond the dream state. So we are, and we are, like it says in the Bible, instructed in the night through dreams and visions in the night. Well, we can get very instructive dreams, but all of humanity is one in that deep sleep state, and that's where we get our real refreshment. Yes, sir.
Just to add to what your brother was saying, I think the confusion might be on the idea of consciousness itself. Consciousness is relative. There's relative consciousness on this plane, relative on this plane, this plane.
Right.
Now, to ask someone on this plane to recognize a consciousness on this plane is impossible until you are at that plane. So consciousness is relative. So when you speak of consciousness and say, well, you won't have consciousness here because you're in this, you know, this particular situation, that's actually, it's almost like pulling at you to want to raise to that kind, because you cannot begin to understand another consciousness unless you transcend to another consciousness. You know, just like Nirvana, people talk about it's a blowing out situation and all that. Now, no matter how much one speak of Nirvana, You will not understand until you actually understand what that consciousness is at that level. But there's clearly an individuality, you know, we're talking about individuality. So that individuality still runs through everything. But your level of perception will always be different, depends on your level of relative consciousness.
Thank you. That's well put. Thank you. Yes.
So basically, that means that they are speaking not to the adepts, they're speaking to us. We are the ones who have that problem.
Bingo.
Okay. Bingo. We have that problem of comprehension in the back.
Also, we were wondering too, the masters have all their principles in control. So their lower nature isn't butting in, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can, you know, they aren't able to be conscious of things.
Yeah, don't know if we should talk about the masters as having a lower nature. They have transcended that. They've transmuted. It's not a part of their nature. They've moved beyond that, in a sense. Yes.
You think it's beautifully said in that same paragraph on the second page. The moment we incarnate, there is the contrast between spirit and matter. The purely spiritual man is not intellectual. His consciousness is said to be universal. So the highly developed one, as we said, would not be subject to that contrast. It's been re-blended, reabsorbed.
Right, and a master can use a body if necessary. And they have and they do. They can take up a body and use a body temporarily, and then so they know how to do that. Yes.
Yes, on the first page there, where it mentions the sense of being stage Robert Crosby comes from perceptive power in action. As the range of perception and reflection increases, the realization of being becomes stronger. It's a progressive, and it's still, we're still to remember that unity, that monad, and that sentence comes from perceptive power in action, and as the range of perception and reflection increases, the realization of being becomes stronger.
Yes, and something that's very instructive, at the bottom of the page, it says that apart from cosmic substance, cosmic ideation could not manifest as individual consciousness, since it is only through a vehicle of matter that consciousness wells up as I am I, a physical basis being necessary to focus a ray of universal mind at a certain stage of complexity. So we can look at ourselves as a certain stage of complexity here. The ray is being manifested through us. We're part of this grand evolutionary scheme. And then it says, intellectual evolution was not possible before the incarnation for another excellent reason. There was no contrast. The moment we incarnate, there is contrast between spirit and matter. The purely spiritual man is not intellectual. His consciousness is said to be universal. We find this in children, the very sweet, innocent children that haven't been exposed, hopefully, to too much damage. Just how they're not intellectual, but they can make great observations. They can make wonderful observations. You can learn so much from young children, from very young children, we think. And So they're in that state. I mean, they're returning from the Devaconic state that after where they've been refreshed and they've been instructed and they've been able to assimilate the lessons and the teachings of the last incarnation, and it may be 1,000 or 1,500 years since they've walked this earth. And yet, in education, too often we're trying to, you know, put things into the minds, which is really inculcation, rather than true education, work with what they have and draw them out. So we don't want to educate, I mean, we don't want to denigrate education, but often that's what happens, that if we listen to children, they have a lot of wisdom. They really do. So we have a little bit of time left. We were talking about this earlier. Every night of our lives, we go into a comparable condition, and yet we reemerge in all our integrity the following day. So it is said that the thread of radiance, which is imperishable and dissolves only in nirvana, reemerges from its integrity on the day when the great law calls all back into action. So we're not sure. Did we say that the children were returning from nirvana or Devakon? We meant to say Devakon, because there's a we're not sure. But in case we did, in nirvana, it is when you're done with this evolutionary process, and you can take your reward, but you're basically done with humanity until the next great round of evolution. Whereas Devakon is that state, it's literally Devakon, the place of the gods, where we go in between incarnations after we go through the purging of Kamaloka, where the worst aspects are purged, then in Devakon we have our reward, as it were. It's heaven. It's temporary, and then we are drawn back. We're drawn back because there's various ways. If we have a desire to help humanity, we can actually be awoken early and reminded of our mission to our brothers and sisters, or the natural term, whenever that is up, whether it be 1,000 or 1,500 years. So we reemerge in all our integrity on the day when the great law calls all things back into action. And that back.
And the description of what happens just before that reemergence is the last sentence or two on the page here. It sees the stream of its past incarnations by a certain divine light. It sees all humanity at once, but still there is, as it were, a stream which is always the eye. And we think this refers to a more developed period, but it's also a good remembering of that moment before when we impart.
Right, and all the knowledge is not lost. It may be forgotten. We may not be able to consciously recall it, but it is all being recorded. Every thought, every word, every deed, every action, every inaction, everything, it is all recorded. There are those that are known as the recorders, the Lipika, or Lipika, we're not sure of the exact pronunciation. Everything is recorded, and everything is recalled in due time. So we thank everyone for coming today, and we remind you of our Gita class on Wednesday evening. Meeting is adjourned.